Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio, Night Tonight Game. Back with you on the John Chuckery Show. Live in the Key Studios. Monday evening, Brown Liquor Music Hour rolling right along. 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Odyssey.com app, so catch it on the go. Social media at 929 The Game. At JMSH316, at JarvisD90. Brooklyn just destroyed the Nets tonight. The Bucks tonight, 125-86. I saw a stat that said the Nets became the first playoff team to win a playoff game without a former MVP by 35 or more points. So... that's a strange stat, but the Nets without Harden tonight won 125-86. So yeah, that was a bloodletting out there. And as we said earlier, Coach Bud is going to be probably looking for a job after this series is all said and done. But anyway, the story of the weekend, of course, was a new era in Falcons football as Julio Jones moves on. You know, it was interesting looking at the national media and some of their perspective and thoughts about Julio Jones. We always talk about the Peter King theory about, you know, guys understand the NFL. Peter King, Albert Breer, because I'm going to reference him here in just a minute. You know, those guys understand the totality of the league much better than all of us do, you know, here. But when it comes to the Atlanta Falcons, we understand the Falcons much more because we live it, breathe it, eat it every single day. Guys like Albert Breer don't live it every single day and haven't lived it for the last, you know, I'm almost 30 years of it now. And some of you longer, some of you shorter, but I mean, you understand what I'm saying, that we live every bit of it. That's what we care about, and that's what we follow through all of it. So some of the fact, you know, from fiction out of all of it, the Falcons were never going to get any real compensation back for Julio Jones as far as draft picks or player or anything like that. Now, I do think that the Falcons could have gotten more compensation had they traded him earlier, more around the draft. Not so much because you'd have gotten draft picks for this, you know, this past draft that we just had, because you couldn't have, you know, the deal would have had to have been held until June 1st. But I think teams would have been more likely to give you something better, maybe a first round pick at that time. Maybe wrong, but that's just what my gut tells me on something like that, that his trade value may have been more higher, because now you're trading him at a point where you're a month away from training camp and everybody knows you have to get rid of him, and the Falcons don't even have their draft pick signed because they have no money. So you had to do something quickly, right? You had to do something quickly that got you some money freed up. The deal was always about freeing up cash. And that's why the most important part, as we talked about with Michael Rothstein, is the fact that Tennessee picked up all of the money. I said before, if Tennessee had come or some other team, so let's put it this way. I think that we heard about that there were a couple of teams or at least one team that had a first-round pick offer. My guess is the reason the Falcons didn't take that deal is because one of those teams said, okay, we'll give you a first-round pick, but you got to pick up $5, $6, $8 million of Julio's salary for it. And so if that's the case, then that deal doesn't do a whole lot of good for the Atlanta Falcons, because the Falcons need cash. This is not about players and what they need as far as that goes. They need cash money. And they need cash money for three reasons. One is they have to pay their draft class. Number two is they like to have some emergency cash on hand in case they run into something during the season and need to add a player through injury or whatever. And three is if you start to look on the waiver wire when you get to, you know, the end of these mandatory mini camps, you get to the end of training camp and guys start to get cut, you want to be able to have some financial flexibility, right? There's that Braves word, financial flexibility to be able to go pick up a guy. And you saw, like, for instance, Cordarrelle Patterson was a $3 million one-year deal. So you can get a decent player for not a ton of cash, and especially as you get close to the season and guys want a job, right? And the Falcons have, I think it's the number four waiver wire pick is what D-Led has told us, right, throughout all of this. So the Falcons needed the cash more than they needed anything else. Now, Albert Breer wrote a column today on Monday Morning Quarterback talking about how the Julio Jones trade was made over the weekend, but this has been 2 years in the making. And basically, he's trying to opine that sources, you know, have told him that Julio hasn't been happy for a couple of years and has wanted out and this, that, and the other. Well, a couple of things. One is, why have we not heard a peep about any of that? If Julio Jones was truly disgruntled and didn't want to be here, wouldn't we have heard about that over the last couple of years? I don't remember anybody saying that Julio was. Now, did Julio want more money and more upfront money and more instant cash? Yes. So do I. So does Jarvis. So does anybody that you know. If I can get it, I want it. But I don't remember Julio Jones being disgruntled, not happy. Well, he missed the day of training camp, okay? And he didn't play the whole preseason. So that was no big deal. Yeah, but him and Matt have to get on the same page. They played together for 11 years. So if he really was disgruntled, and you're the Atlanta Falcons, and I have a star player that is truly disgruntled and doesn't want to be here, then number one, why wouldn't I trade him when he's at his peak value, where I could get good compensation for him? And number two is, why would I extend him like they did in 2019? If I have a player that doesn't want to be here, why would I give that guy a contract extension and back up a whole Brinks truck full of money to give to him? That makes no sense whatsoever. So it's multiples of reasons like that why I don't buy what Albert Breer is saying. Now, do I think that Julio Jones was ready to be traded now? Yes, I do believe that. But I think that that is a sign of Julio also reading the tea leaves for it. I think that's Julio reading the tea leaves and understanding that the structure of this franchise is going to change over the next couple of years, maybe 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. Matt won't be around for a long time yet, you know, a couple of years, maybe three out of all of it. New coach, new system. I'm not saying he didn't want to play for any of those guys, but maybe, you know, we know it was real close to Dan Quinn. We do know that him and Dan Quinn had a really good relationship with one another. Maybe he didn't want to go through a new coach and general manager here. So I can understand all of that. But this idea that this is like 2 years in the making, I think that's a lot of 2020 hindsight is what it is. Because there would be no reason to extend a guy that doesn't want to be here, and especially for as much cash as what the Falcons doled out. Because every time Julio wanted money, the Falcons gave him money for all of it. It wasn't like the Falcons ever shortchanged him or denied him money. You know, he was always paid as a top-flight guy, and if he didn't feel like he was being paid at the right level, then he would get more. He was given more money for it. That happened a couple of times, you know, in his tenure here. So, you know, it seems like that there's a lot of revisionist history about Julio Stead and where he stands and this, that, and the other. By the way, did you see the other thing? Supposedly Julio said that, you know, he wanted to go to a contender with a quarterback who could throw the deep ball that he could run underneath. And then did you see, like, people started tweeting out the pictures of the couple of drop passes? You know, what was it, the drop touchdown pass against Dallas? And what was the other one, Jarvis, that the other?
Was it Carolina?
Yeah, I think Carolina. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Carolina and Dallas, the drop touchdown passes where he ran underneath and dropped them. And look, every wide receiver in the league drops passes, but it's just always funny that when you hear things like that, you know people are going to have their ammo ready to come back for all of it. So I did think that that was funny what people were putting out there. But look, the old saying, Coughlin's Law, you know, Tom Cruise, as he said in Cocktail, Coughlin's Law, nothing ends well or it wouldn't end. This is about as amicable as it could be. He goes to the AFC. The Falcons won't have to see him. By the way, he will be here. You know that, right? For the first preseason game of the year is against the Titans. How much do you think Julio's going to play in the first preseason game for the Titans? Jarvis, if I said put his over-under snaps in the first preseason game at plus 0.5, is he over or under half a snap?
Can you put the over-under in negative?
And no.
I'll go under that if it was – I bet under that.
Yeah. I'll put it to you this way. Here, let's make it more simple. There's a better chance you and I take snaps for the Titans in their first preseason game than Julio Jones takes. Yeah, but he's learning a new system. He's going to have a new quarterback. I don't care. He's Julio he's Julio MF and Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He ain't worried about him taking snaps. They know what they've got. They know what he is. Yeah, but it's a new system and new team. Okay. All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. He ain't taking no preseason snaps.
Good play caller, center. They find the good players. They fit in very, very easily.
Yeah,
you give them the ball.
Julio's not fighting for a spot.
Yeah,
Julio's not trying to fight for his spot.
Nah, he's good.
I mean, he's not a young guy coming into the league trying to learn about the league. He'll have training camp and some other things to get to know Ryan Tannehill. But if I'm Ryan Tannehill, I could care less if he plays one snap. Could care less. Yeah, but chemistry. Okay, all right. Lord have mercy. You got a guy that good. Don't worry about chemistry. So, you know, the Falcons, I think got as good a deal as they could possibly ask for. You get a couple of draft picks for it, including a second round draft pick for it. And more importantly is the Tennessee Titans pick up all of his base salary. And by the way, they've already said they're going to have to figure out some money moving forward to be able to pay him moving forward. Right? You see that? They've already said that, yeah, they have to try to figure out their money moving forward on the cap. Because remember, Julio's not a free agent at the end of the year. This is not a one-year rental that they have. And the Falcons have, you know, over the next 2 years, it's like $15 million, not quite $16 million total in dead money that they're splitting up over a couple of years. That's why he did it past June 1st is, you know, there'll be about, what, I think $7.5 million of cap hit that's this year and about the same number that comes up next year for the Falcons. So all in all, I think it's as good a deal as the Falcons could have gotten. The Falcons needed this for the financial reasons that we talked about. But this idea, this revisionist history about, oh, this has been 2 years in the making, that's something that somebody who's a Colts fan is going to read and think it's true. That's somebody who's a Patriots fan is going to read and think it's true. That's somebody who's a Chargers fan is going to read and think that it's true out there because Albert Breer reported it or Jason Lock on 4 reported it or Peter King reported it. But I don't buy any of that. And we're here every day. I could tell you lots of rumors about Julio, okay, that have nothing to do with football, but I've never heard that from a football perspective that he was unhappy and wanted to be traded. Because I certainly, if I have a guy like that, I'm not, especially at the wide receiver position, I'm not giving him a dump truck full of money just a couple of years ago just to try to give him shut-up money and keep him happy. He either wants to be here or he doesn't. All right, last night, A&E wrapped up the WWE biography series with the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be in Bret Hart. We'll talk about that next. Chuck Reed hanging out at the Key Studios on Sports Radio Night of the Game, Odyssey.com. Rhythmic dogs, harmonic dogs, house dogs, street dogs, dogs of the world unite, dancing dogs.
Dogs. It's late night after all, baby.
Sports Radio, 99 The Game, back with you on the John Chuckery Show, hanging out in the Key Studios, headed to the top of the hour and share our sports brief. Brownaker Music Hour rolling right along, 404-741-0929, Solomon Rose Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Odyssey.com app, so you catch us on the go. Social media is at 929 The Game, at JMCH316, at Jarvis D90. Last night was the final episode of the A&E biography series and on WWE Superstars. And, of course, it was Bret the Hitman Hart, the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. I very much enjoyed this. I'm a big fan of Bret Hart. I was a big fan of his. You know, by the time Bret Hart came into the WWE, I was already getting into my teenage years because he came in 84, 85 or something like that. And I love the Hart Foundation. I love the Hart Foundation tag team with Jim Neidhart and Jimmy Hart. You know, I love that original pairing. Always a fan of Bret. You know, we've talked about, you know, you take the top 10 or 15 matches all time in WWE history, and Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart are all over most of those. You know, I mean, I tweeted last night, that back-to-back SummerSlam, 91-92, 91 against Kurt Hennig in Madison Square Garden. Tremendous match. But my favorite is the 92 versus Davey Boy, where he lost the Intercontinental title in Wembley Stadium because the crowd is so big. And, you know, Bret's sister was involved in the storyline because Davey Boy was married to Bret's sister. But I thought it was a really good look at his family and the history of his family and him getting the business. I thought some of the old photos of Bret looked great. Anytime they put that 80s WWE footage on TV, man, I'm all in. I'm all in on that kind of stuff. You give me that, you know, late 80s, early 90s WWE footage, you know, some of those matches, I'm all in on that. And, you know, there were some things that, you know, people forget he was the 93 King of the Ring winner. And in that night, he wrestled three times, you know, that for the King of the Ring 93. You know, he had to win three matches. So he wrestled three different times. And yeah, I understand the script of what the result was, and he knew he was going to win. But the fact that, you know, he wrestled three times in one night tells you about how good of a performer that he was. I did think it was interesting that he never they didn't talk very much at all about Hulk Hogan. And they didn't talk very much about his relationship with Hulk Hogan in that transition period of when Bret first became the champion and Hogan was on his way out. Because that is, you know, WrestleMania 9 in Vegas, Bret's the champion, he loses the title to Yokozuna at that match, the main event, but Hogan comes in and says, look, he cheated. And then Mr. Fuji challenges Hogan. Bret gives him his blessing. Bret said in his book that the reason he gave Hogan the blessing on all that was because that he expected a return of the favor later on at like SummerSlam that year that they would get back together. And there are some PR photos out there somewhere of you can see Bret and Hogan on a beach tugging at the championship belt. Well, of course, Hogan left after King of the Ring 93, and he went and filmed a movie and then was gone to WCW not long after that. So Bret never got his return match. King of the Ring 93 is where Hogan gets bonsaied by the Yokozuna, the flash paper in his eye, and gets bonsaied, and Hogan loses the title, and Yoko takes the title from him. So Bret was not happy at all with Hulk Hogan. He thought Hulk Hogan manipulated his way into getting the title at WrestleMania 9 and then, you know, never returned the favor. So he was never a fan of Hulk Hogan. Now, I understand he's older, and just like Shawn Michaels, they've reconciled and all that, I think. But they never really talked about that. Remember a few weeks ago on the Shawn Michaels biography, I talked about the real-life angst between Bret and Shawn, and I said one of the things that was that really bothered Bret because they showed Bret doing the one promo on Shawn where I forget what it was he said, but I said, you know, the thing that Shawn said to Bret that got him so fired up was the Sunny Days promo. Remember I talked about that he was stooping, you know, Shawn was stooping Sunny, and then people thought that Bret was doing it. You know what's funny? They played the Sunny Days clip last night. They played the part where Shawn Michaels said to Bret Hart that he'd been having some Sunny Days lately, and they talked a little bit about it. So what we didn't get in the Shawn Michaels bio, we got in the Bret Hart bio because that was a big deal. And Bret has said that, and he said it last night on the show, you know, his wife started asking him questions about all of that, you know, because they were sharing a locker room together because Bret, it was, you know, it'd be so crowded in some of those small arenas, And Sonny had her own locker room that Brett would go in there and just kind of partner up and try to do it. Now, nothing really happened, if you believe the rumor and innuendo. Brett has said nothing happened. Sonny has said nothing happened. The only reason I believe it is because Sonny has spilled the beans on everybody. So there, anybody that Sonny has been with, she spilled the beans on, right? So, I mean, it's not like Sonny has held back anything. If Sonny had an affair with Bret Hart, she would have said that by now. I promise. Like, she's not held back from anybody, whether it's Dolph Ziggler or Shawn Michaels, or, you know, she's told all of her tales, you know, about what she did. So that's why I don't believe anything happened, is because if she hasn't admitted to it, then there's probably nothing there out of all of it. But it is fascinating to look back, you know, at his career. You know, Austin at least got WrestleMania 19 to end his career with The Rock, and that was his final match. We saw The Undertaker last year at WrestleMania get the Boneyard match and had a chance to end his career. You know, Flair got his quote-unquote retirement match, although he kept wrestling because he needed money, because, you know, he desperately needed more cash. But he got his retirement match at WrestleMania with Shawn Michaels, right? That was part of the Shawn Michaels bio as well. So a lot of those guys got their retirement match. Bret Hart didn't. Remember, he gets kicked in the head by Bill Goldberg for real at Starrcade. And I did think it was interesting that he did not have anything good to say about Bill Goldberg, that he did say bad things about Goldberg, that he was on a scale of 1 to 10 as a wrestler. He was a 0 out of all of it. But, yeah, Goldberg, you know, Goldberg being a martial arts guy, kicked him in the head and ended up being a real kick that gave Bret a severe concussion, and he was out. And that was pretty much it. So Bret never got that. You know, the only match Bret ever had after that was that stupid gimmick match at WrestleMania against Vince McMahon, when it was like a no DQ kind of hardcore match. But remember, by that time, Bret's older. He'd had a stroke. He had health issues. You know, he had the issues with, you know, the concussion. There were a lot of issues with Bret's health that at that time he could not do anything. Back in, what was that, 2010, right? That he did that, because it's 12 years or whatever after all of it. So I thought it was a really good show. You know, the Montreal Screwjob is one of those things. Obviously, we talked about this on the Shawn Michaels episode. You know, they went into pretty good detail. I would tell you that if you watch the Wrestling with Shadows documentary on Bret, I would definitely suggest, is it Wrestling with Shadows? I believe. Let me make sure I got that right. The Wrestling with Shadows. I think that's what it is. Is Wrestling with Shadows? But yeah, Wrestling with Shadows. Yeah, that movie is really good. I very much enjoyed watching Wrestling with Shadows, because it is a documentary. And, you know, Bret's wife was really aggravated with Triple H and Shawn Michaels, you know, in the hallway. Like, she's prominent in that video at the end about yelling at Triple H. You knew, and you let, I mean, you know, she went after all of them. But I thought it was really good. I did not know where Bret Hart was today. You know, I wish Bret Hart was still a little bit more involved in wrestling. They bring back everybody else, but I understand. I think he's one of those guys that he's put the business behind him. He knows he's not going to compete again. I don't think he wants to get mixed up. You know, you just saw Paul White, and you saw, I guess I can say this now, without speaking out of turn. You know, I talked to Teddy Long a while back when I did that event out in Villarica, and we were just talking about, because that was coming off the Monday Night Raw, which was the Legends kind of show that they do, right? They're like once a year Legends show. And Randy Orton was back there berating Mark Henry. He was berating Paul White. And my understanding is that those guys were not real happy about that they were basically made to look like fools. And if you notice in the last couple of months, in fact, this past Sunday, a week ago Sunday, Big Show and Mark Henry both signed with AEW to be commentators. Both those guys are at AEW right now. So I'm not sure Bret wants to come back and deal with all that nonsense, you know, and be put in his place. But look, I've said before, my favorite match in WWE, my favorite wrestling match in history, but WWE otherwise, my favorite wrestling match in history is Bret Hart and Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13. I think that's the best match in WWE history. I think it's the second most important match in WWE history, right behind Andre and Hulk Hogan, because I do believe, in my mind, I believe that that's what launched the Attitude Era. When Steve Austin became a babyface and Bret became a heel in 97 with Ken Shamrock debuting, I think that's what the real start of the Attitude Era was. All the blood and everything, even though it wasn't supposed to be any blood, the blood and Austin and everything and just the rattlesnake and his toughness and everything. I think, to me, that's what launched the Attitude Era, was that match and just all the tentacles. And one of the funny things about 97 for Bret Hart is that even though the Montreal Screwjob happened at Survivor Series and all that, Bret Hart had a great 97. Royal Rumble 97, I think, is a really underrated Royal Rumble. The next month, the In Your House pay-per-view, where he had the four-way match, because remember, Shawn lost his smile, so they had the four-way match for the title. Bret, that's where Bret gets the title, because Shawn lost his smile. That was what? That was Bret Austin, who won the Rumble, but there was, because of the controversy of the Rumble, they had the four-way. So I think the final four was what? Undertaker, Vader, Bret, and Austin, I think, was that main event at that February In Your House. Then, of course, WrestleMania 13, I just referenced the match. SummerSlam that year, that's where Undertaker and Bret wrestled with Shawn as the referee, and Shawn hits Undertaker with a chair, and that starts the whole Shawn Michaels Undertaker feud. And then, of course, you know, that leads Bret into Survivor Series. And just the Canadian Stampede was another thing that happened that year. The creative for Bret that year was great. That was his best year, even with the Montreal Screwjob. His creative, his character, his promos, that was as good as it was for Bret in 97. He was fantastic before he went to WCW. And I guarantee you, he said he regrets going to WCW. But he had no choice in some ways. The Montreal Screwjob is a whole other discussion. Bret wasn't going to take the title, and Bret wasn't scheduled to leave the WWE until the next month. But anyway, good stuff. I encourage you to watch it if you like Bret Hart. All right, going to wrap things up. Love TKO coming up next. Jared Sports Brief after that. Sports right out of the game, Odyssey.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.